From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, the politics of the Central American border children and Senator Ted Cruz, how a state representative is defying Texas cities with his chain of payday loan shops, and remembering blues guitar great Johnny Winter. This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. This week, Texas Senator John Cornyn teamed up with Texas Congressman Henry Cuellar, a Laredo Democrat, to take on the problem of the surge of refugee children from Central America. They're looking to speed up the children's deportations back to their home countries, where drug trafficking, murderous gangs, and extreme poverty are out of control. The issue is also playing out in state politics. The candidates for Texas Lieutenant Governor have, not surprisingly, staked out opposing positions on the proposal that would speed up the return of migrant children to their Central American countries. KERA's Shelley Koffler reports that Republican Dan Patrick likes the proposal. Democrat Leticia Vandeput worries that it would be a death sentence.
The proposal moving through Congress comes from U.S. Senator John Cornyn, a Republican, and Representative Henry Cuellar, a Democrat from Laredo. It calls for the thousands of Central American children detained at the border to be treated the same as Mexican children. Within 7 days of being apprehended, a judge would hear their plea to stay in the United States. The judge would then decide on deportation within 72 hours. Dan Patrick, the Republican candidate for lieutenant governor, cites the growing number of children crossing the border into Texas and says he supports the speedy hearing.
This is not going to slow down until you send a message to these countries by sending the children back. There will always be exception to a case, you know, asylum or someone in great danger the judge can decide. But if this isn't a wake-up call to everyone in Washington to pass legal immigration reform, I don't know what is.
Patrick's opponent, Democrat Leticia Vandeput, says the requirement of a hearing within a week of detention could be a death sentence for some children. Vandeput says she talked with some of the children in the Brownsville Detention Center Wednesday.
These children that I have visited with firsthand don't remind me of economic immigrants. They are more asylees, refugees who are fleeing for their lives. What I worry about is a 9-year-old child who is unaccompanied, who has 7 days to put together the documents that could determine whether that child lives or dies. I'm worried that that may not be enough time.
Patrick describes the situation with the young migrants as chaos. He says agents needed to prevent drugs and criminals from coming over the border are now being diverted to address the unaccompanied children. Vandeput believes local law enforcement do need more resources, but she says she saw in Brownsville and McAllen a situation that's stabilizing and has become more orderly in the past few weeks. Shelley Koffler, KERA News.
Texas Senator Ted Cruz has filed his own bill dealing with the Central American children refugees while also targeting President Obama's attempts of using executive orders for immigration reform. Reporter Manu Raju writes about Cruz's new ploy in Politico.com.
He's very concerned about the 2012 directive that the president issued to provide avoid deportation for thousands of young people who were brought to this country illegally at a young age and have since applied for a deferral so they will not be deported for at least 2 years. The acronym is known as DACA, and DACA has gotten heavily criticized by Republicans who say that this has led to the crisis along the border. So what Ted Cruz is saying is that any bill that comes to the floor and the Senate is acting upon must include language that would end DACA, at least prevent the president from broadening that proposal out and continuing it after this existing period. That is going to create a little bit of a problem here because Democrats will not go for that idea. A lot of Republicans are not sure that's the best approach to go right now because tying it to such a package could only complicate its progress. But Ted Cruz has a lot of support from conservatives who don't like this proposal, who don't like what's happening along the border, and believe that this has been caused because of that 2012 directive. So we'll see how this Republican debate will shape out, because it could really impact whether or not billions are spent to deal with the crisis along the border.
So DACA is what the deferred action, this is what a lot of the Dreamers are still able to retain their residency in the United States, even though they don't actually have legal status. And so this is what they're depending on.
That's right. And, you know, in the supporters of this are say it's a dubious claim to say that folks are coming here illegally or trying to because of this policy change that the administration enacted right before the elections last in 2012, because the people who applied for this have come to the country, had to have been living continuously in the country between 2007 and 2012 when the directive was issued, and they have to meet a series of requirements too, including certain academic or military requirements, and pass a background check. So this doesn't apply for anybody who wants to come over to the border right now. So they argue that it's a dubious claim to go after that. And actually, politically, Democrats actually are open to having this fight, because the issue involving the Dreamers is politically popular in a lot of states and some swing states in the midterm. So if this turns into a bigger fight on the Senate floor, Democrats believe at least politically they could win, even if the package legislatively stalls.
And what's interesting about this is that this could be Ted Cruz's return to the hardball court after his government shutdown scheme.
That's right. And, you know, he, of course, this is the role that he loves playing. This is the role that the grassroots, the Tea Party conservatives love watching him play. And it's the role that he's going to play if he pursues the presidential run in 2016, which seems increasingly likely, to be that combative conservative and one who's not afraid to take tough stands, even if it creates political headaches and leads to major controversies in crisis situations like the government shutdown in October of last year. It remains to be seen exactly how far he takes this. He just started to engage on this today. He was talking about it with reporters on the floor. I think you'll hear him ratchet up his rhetoric in the coming days. And, you know, we'll see how much support he gets among conservatives. Right now, the House Republicans don't seem to be going in that direction, but that could change particularly if Speaker John Boehner has trouble getting Democratic support for a more moderate bill. Maybe he takes it in a more conservative direction, embraces what Cruz is saying, and gets through the House, but that has no chance in the Senate, and that could lead to a legislative stalemate.
It depends on whether or not Cruz can rally the base to adopt this policy, proposed policy, and then he would be able to bring the Tea Party forces into play here.
Yeah, absolutely. And not to mention the conservatives in the House, who he has particularly sway with, a few dozen conservatives, very hardcore Tea Party conservatives who are in line with his ideology. You know, it's a minority of the majority caucus in the House, but it's still enough to create problems for John Boehner if he needs to pass a bill on a very narrow margin. And if Boehner doesn't get cooperation from Democrats, that could create complications in the House. So this is no slam dunk, and a lot of folks are staking out their ground, and clearly Ted Cruz is staking out a ground to the right.
Right, and back to the 2016 factor, Texas Governor Rick Perry has seen his star rise as he's been out on front on this issue for the conservatives, and maybe Ted Cruz felt that that was a challenge to him. He really wants to get all the Texas marbles that would be involved in that race, and he can't afford to have Governor Perry challenge him on that issue.
Absolutely. I mean, that's one of the things that, you know, we were thinking about as we were pursuing this story, was that, you know, Perry has been out there, not to mention John Cornyn, the senior senator from Texas. He's proposed a bipartisan bill to deal with this issue involving trying to speed up some of the deportation proceedings and dealing with sending more judges to deal with this matter and overhauling a 2008 human trafficking law that he thinks is part of the problem here. You know, Cruz has been sort of quiet up until now, so now he's starting to reengage, and because this is a huge issue, as you know, in Texas and also nationally, and this is turning into a big political issue, and clearly Cruz sees some ground to stake out, and it's even to the right of Rick Perry.
Manu Raju is Politico.com's senior congressional correspondent. He writes that Senator Ted Cruz is entering the political fight over immigration and the crisis with these Central American children, and he's looking to excite the conservative base looking to prevent White House action on the issue while also looking for an end of DACA for the Dreamers. The promised man fence of the Texas militia on the Texas-Mexico border fizzled out. The promise of gun-toting patriots who would take it upon themselves to secure the border turned out to be a no-show. Now the Texas Nationalist Movement is calling for a statewide day of action to rally the state on the issue. This is the organization that also wants Texas to break away from the United States and form its own nation. Daniel Miller is the president of the Texas Nationalist Movement.
Members of our group will be gathering at locations, either high visibility locations or locations that are related directly to this border issue, and that may be some of the proposed detention facilities that Homeland Security is planning on opening. It can be offices of state representatives or state government offices, and in some cases it's the Mexican consulates. But our members, supporters, and other folks that are concerned about this will be gathering there to just have their voice heard, to let Governor Perry know that the Texas Nationalist Movement and Texans everywhere want him to act and to do his job.
Do you have some specific action points that you want Governor Perry to take on?
Sure. We want, really what we want from Governor Perry is twofold. Number one is we want him to issue a full call-up of the Texas State Guard. We know that obviously he could call up the National Guard to reinforce the border. However, there is a concern that the federal government, that the president would federalize the Texas National Guard and prevent that deployment. However, the Texas State Guard is fully under the control and the purview of the state government.
Okay, so who would pay for that?
Well, obviously the state of Texas would.
How is that going to change the flow of people on the border? I mean, I really don't see that many people getting through Border Patrol and Customs. They have a heavy, heavy presence on the border. They are there, and they are stopping people, and they are apprehending people. How is this going to be different?
Well, the fact of the matter is that the Border Patrol agents themselves have been saying for months now that the number coming through is greater than their actual capacity to handle, process, and interdict. So, you know, they're even saying that for them it's a manpower issue. They are overwhelmed. So, you know, what that means is that if manpower is the problem, let the state, if in the absence of federal government action, let the state go down and let the state participate in doing this. So, I mean, you can go out and say that, you know, people are being caught, people are being interdicted. That's obviously true, but not all of them. And it's happening in sufficient quantities as to have the Border Patrol themselves sound the alarm months ago on this particular issue. But the second thing that we're calling on Governor Perry to do is call a special session to address the issues related to this particular situation.
So when you call a special session, the governor puts items that he would allow on the table. What specific laws would Governor Perry allow to be discussed?
The current DPS border surge expanded and made permanent to place the law enforcement presence down there in the border counties to address some of this issue, to basically be the backup net for the State Guard operations, Border Patrol operations. So we would like to see that. In addition, we want to see the legislature address this issue of the Department of Homeland Security wanting to contract out with cities and counties here in Texas to house foreign detainees. We want to see that particular aspect addressed, and very much how it was addressed in League City recently by saying that there will be no contracts issued out to house foreign detainees.
Daniel Miller is the president of the Texas Nationalist Movement, a group that's calling for Texas independence from the United States. They're calling for a statewide protest on Saturday, July 19th, to demand action on the border crisis. Brownsville is the latest Texas city to work on passing regulations curbing payday lending practices. Attempts to pass a state law that would regulate the industry has failed, due mainly to the efforts of State Representative Gary Elkins. Elkins, a Houston Republican, owns the payday lending company Power Finance. Forrest Wilder covers the payday lending industry for the Texas Observer.
Yeah, State Representative Gary Elkins, he's a Republican from Houston, who's been in the legislature for a few terms. He actually has a background as one of the pioneers of the current payday loan business model in Texas, which essentially they escape Texas usury laws and can charge whatever they like in terms of rates. And he helped kind of come up with the model that allows them to do that. Owns a number of payday loan locations around the state, including some locations in Dallas and San Antonio, where those stores have refused to comply with ordinances in San Antonio and Dallas, have refused to register, have refused to fix problems they have with their zoning, and his company, Power Finance, is being criminally prosecuted for allegedly violating these ordinances in both Dallas and San Antonio municipal courts. It's one of the few companies that has been prosecuted in Texas under any city ordinance to date.
Now, so these cities are enacting ordinances, and this seems to be a trend across Texas of cities trying to do this, trying to rein in these payday lenders because it's not happening on the state level? Is that why?
Right. The legislature has, over the course of at least three sessions, so 5 or 6 years, has taken up the idea of passing some reforms to the payday loan business, pretty modest reforms, I would say, in the views of most consumer advocates, but has failed to pass anything. And so essentially we have this unregulated industry that can charge whatever rates it wants and has very little scrutiny from the state. As a result of that, cities, although they don't usually deal in consumer finance issues, have stepped up. And I believe the most current count is that 18 cities across Texas have passed payday loan ordinances. The feds haven't really stepped in. The state hasn't stepped in. And so, weirdly, it's been these cities that have had to take on this issue that they normally don't really deal in.
But these cities, they're not outlawing payday lenders. They're just, what are they trying to do? What are these ordinances requiring?
Right. You know, most states that have dealt with this issue many states that have dealt with this issue impose a cap on the rates. So basically, a state will say, we're not banning payday lending. You can still go get a payday loan, but in the interest of protecting consumers, we're not going to allow these companies to charge more than, say, 100% interest, 100% APR. The cities actually haven't done that approach. They've done something that's even less stringent than that. What they've basically said is, we want to try to limit the size of these loans so that people don't take on something too big for them to be able to handle. And we want to limit the number of times that people can roll over the loan. So what happens a lot of times is people take out the loan, and then when it comes due, they don't have the money to pay for it. So the company will say, well, that's okay. We'll allow you to roll over the loan, issue you a new loan, in the sense, and tack on new fees. And so it's a cycle of debt that people get trapped in. So this is an attempt to try to deal with that, and also to get the companies to register and get some sort of handle on them, just a basic way that cities kind of deal with these things using their police powers.
So it's not trying to wipe out the industry, but maybe regulate it a little bit, monitor it. So, but even with that, State Representative Gary Elkins, who owns this one chain, not playing ball.
Right. It's interesting because most of the companies have come into compliance. I mean, they don't like these ordinances. There's been lawsuits, and they've complained about it. And frankly, some locations have had to close. In Dallas, I think there was 13 Cash America locations that had to close down. So it has had an impact on their bottom line. But industry doesn't like regulation, but they kind of have to deal with it and move on. Gary Elkins is interesting. I mean, he's a lawmaker, but in this particular instance, he's so upset with the laws that he's allegedly refused to comply with the ordinances and thus is being prosecuted criminally. These aren't like huge, this isn't a felony or anything. These are Class C misdemeanors in municipal court. So we're not talking about a huge violation here. But it is interesting that a state lawmaker would so aggressively, kind of push back on what I think, again, most consumer advocates would consider a modest ordinance.
But, a payday lender, can you imagine somebody further down on the scale of people who are disliked? And he's a politician. He's got to get reelected. Does that not factor into that?
Well, this isn't his first appearance at the rodeo, so to speak. A couple sessions ago in 2011, one of his Republican colleagues proposed a trio of bills that would have tried to regulate the payday loan industry, and he was one of the principal people very publicly fighting against it. And there was some strange moments on the House floor when other lawmakers, including the sponsor of the bill, were like, this is really shameful. You're a payday lender. You're trying to protect your narrow special interest, and you're up here, accusing us of being, un-American and against the free market because of these very modest reforms we want to pass. But he said, I'm not ashamed of what I do. And that's, been very public about it and has had, from as far as I know, like zero impact on its reelection chances.
Now, you said that the national powers, federal powers, are not getting too involved. We were seeing they have put a $10 million fine against Ace Cash Express, which is based in Irving.
That's right. And I should probably just make sure that I was clear. To date, there hasn't been a ton of activity on the part of the feds, but part of the reason is because the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau is still kind of getting set up, but they're taking a very close look at this issue, and it's expected that their interest in it and their activity around payday and title lending will grow. And I think, Exhibit A of that is this recent decision, as you mentioned, where the agency levied a $10 million fine against Ace, which is a Texas-based company, for basically a variety of deceptive tactics where they would try to talk consumers into borrowing more than they could reasonably afford. And there were things on the record, for example, like the training manual that Ace would give its employees about how to do that. How do you get somebody to go beyond what they initially thought they might need in terms of a loan, and then what happens when they can't pay it? And it was a very kind of illuminating document, I think, when you're trying to see exactly how this works. How do people get trapped in these loans?
Forrest Wilder covers the payday lending industry for the Texas Observer. Texas is mourning the loss of blues guitarist and singer Johnny Winter. Winter died Wednesday in a hotel room in Switzerland. He was 70. Winter was known for his lightning-fast blues licks and his long white hair. Alan Govner is a writer, folklorist, photographer, and filmmaker. He's the author of more than 20 books, including Texas Blues, The Rise of a Contemporary Sound.
Johnny Winter embraced what could be considered the Texas sound, but in another sense, he defied the whole sense of regionalism. Johnny Winter was hungry for the blues early on, but he brought to the blues a rock-infused sound that made a music that was international. Johnny Winter was a great guitar player, but he was also a very important producer. And the records that he produced with Muddy Waters, which won Grammy Awards, are two of the best. So while he was part of the whole idiom of Texas, when I interviewed him, he talked a lot about the complexity of that. He grappled with meaning to be a Texas bluesman. Because Texas, by its nature and the diversity and the vastness, embodies so many different sounds. So for him, he wanted to hear as much music as he could growing up. But mainly his entry point to the blues, while there was certainly a scene in the Golden Triangle, was largely influenced by radio and record. So he was part of that generation of blues rock musicians that was hungry for everything he could hear and pointed up the amazing kind of tapestry of what blues music is.
70 years old, and so he produced records, he played, he was just a dynamic force on stage. What void is there now that Johnny is gone?
I think the void is that Johnny is gone. I think the music that he loved has continued. And I think that was his wish, certainly in the later years. He was a great inspiration to younger guitar players, younger blues rock musicians.
Yeah, Rolling Stone magazine had named Johnny one of the top 100 guitarists of all time. He was lightning fast on with the riffs. How did he get to be so good?
I just think he sat and did the work. He felt the music. He lived the blues.
What about his relationship with his brother, another guitarist?
Well, I think Johnny and Edgar Winter fueled each other, like Jimmy Vaughn and Stevie Ray Vaughan. There was a creative tension there.
The tension, I mean, I know that his brother wanted more jazzy, and he tried to influence his brother, and then Johnny resisted that. He didn't want to learn those chords.
I think in both Johnny and Edgar's music, there's this striving for originality. While they were musicians who loved the tradition out of which they came, they wanted to do something with it that had their own fingerprint on it. They wanted to be distinctive. Their goal was not to just simply preserve blues styles. They wanted to take blues someplace further.
There was some energy happening now about Johnny Winter and people learning about him for the first time who had not been enjoyers of the blues.
Well, I think he brought the blues to a bigger audience. He brought all kinds of musical influences into his music. I mean, as much as he was a bluesman, he was a rocker. And he was at the forefront of that sound. So, yes, I think his music will endure because it is evident in the playing of so many younger musicians.
Alan Govner is a writer, folklorist, photographer, and filmmaker, the author of more than 20 books, including Texas Blues, The Rise of a Contemporary Sound. He wrote extensively about Johnny Winter, the legendary bluesman who died on Wednesday.
Change my ways. Baby, if you want my loving, don't make no break or play. It's my life, pretty baby. Let me live it like I please.
That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. I'm David Martin Davies. You can write to us with an email to texasmatters@tpr.org, and you can write directly on our show page on our website at tpr.org. That's also where you can find past Texas Matters programs to listen to, and you can find us on iTunes. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.